Everybody in the New Day Global Facebook group, good morning to you. And I haven't been able to be as active on social media and stuff as I wanted to be when I started stuff last summer. life has been busy. Some of that's because, well, it's just life and you have kids and stuff like that. Some of it is my private practice has picked up a lot more than I had expected. So it's been taking a lot of energy from me. And I get paid for that. I don't get paid for this. I do get some donations. Appreciate that, but they don't go to me directly. It goes to the nonprofit organization that was our church. And, so those of you that have donated, I appreciate that. I'm going to see if anybody jumps on. A Facebook user says good morning. I'm going to see if I can get on my Facebook feed so I can see. Streaming a couple different places, so. This is one of those mornings where I'm probably just going to start talking and we'll see what happens. Because I couldn't laser lock onto a, sorry, I'm still trying to get in the Facebook here. I couldn't get locked into a topic. It's been a challenge for me the last couple of, see, Angie says good morning from Texas. Tina says good morning. So if you have something you'd like for me to talk about, or questions or anything like that, if you could put it in the chat, that would be awesome because that would help me kind of focus in on something. I got my mind's going like 10 different directions all week long, and then this morning so many different things that I've been thinking about and contemplating and meditating on. I got a lot of good feedback from last week's schedule in my inbox and from people about how much they appreciated what I was talking about. I was talking about approaching life with acceptance, letting go of resistance that we have to things, saying yes to life and not saying no to various different things in life. And so that was really good. Again, I'm just kind of letting it breathe, give people a little bit more time to jump on. If you put a topic or an idea, something you'd like to learn more about or have me talk more about, in the chat, even if I can't get to it today. Greetings, Joyce, watching from Alabama. Thank you. It'll give me some ideas for the kind of content and stuff that I can create on these Sunday morning lives going forward, because it is the one thing other than Freeology Friday that I do with Derek Day that I'm absolutely committed to doing and putting out. I'd love to put out more, like I said, but it's just been a challenge because I've been busy. And this weekend I haven't been feeling the best, but I feel pretty good today. So we'll see. We'll see how this goes. One of the things that I have been thinking about a lot is that we say no to life. We say no to things in life because they're hard or because they're stressful. And in this community, and when I say this community, I don't just mean the New Day Global people or people that watch me, but in this sort of destructed community that's left organized religion or deconstructing or deconstructed from the faith or realize they have religious trauma. And a lot of you and a lot of people I know who deconstruct eventually and ultimately go over into atheism or agnosticism, stuff like that. And then there's a group that is looking for spirituality or looking to bring some of the positive things that maybe that they experienced in their former lives. In my case, my former life in Christianity, there was a lot of really good stuff there. There was a lot of positive stuff and there was a lot of toxic stuff. It was a real blend and a real mix. And at some point for me, the toxicity of what was going on, the dysfunction of what was going on, that just, and by toxicity and dysfunction, I just mean the toxicity and dysfunction that religion itself creates or created for me. The toxicity became greater than the benefit and left me completely burnt out, exposed to me that I had religious trauma, started talking about religious trauma before it kind of became a thing. Probably back in 2016, I started talking about that. But there are still some benefits that I wanted to be able to bring from my former life. And so it was really difficult to, I've talked about this so many times, but it was so, the more committed you were, the more devoted you were, the more destabilizing deconstruction is going to be for you. And I just did not want to live this strictly scientific, materialistic life. And I wanted to be able to bring meaning and bring resources, spiritual resources that I was able to access while I was in the religious aspects of it and touch with those resources. In other words, extra physical wisdom, intuition, assistance from, light beings, angels, whatever you want to call them. Because I know they're there, right? And I know the power that's in that and that kind of stuff. But without having the guardrails of a religious system or a defined spiritual path to follow, then it was very difficult to know exactly what direction to go. And flirting around with some of the stuff in the New Age movement and stuff like that, it became evident to me for me, and I'm just speaking for myself, it became evident to me for me that a lot of the same patterns were replicating, a lot of the same destructive, toxic patterns that were destructive and toxic for me when I was in religion were being replicated in these other small groups. They just had a different form or a different belief system or different language, different dressings, if you will, different costumes, but the same kind of energy. And you see the same thing with atheists and a lot of atheist groups where they come just as othering of people as religion. They become just as dogmatic. They become just as almost evangelistic in the sense that I want other people to think like me. But one of the things, so just a lot of stuff, right? And then you have the pressures of life. You have life kind of pressing in on you. And whether we want to face it or not or admit it or not, a lot of us used our religion or our spirituality as a way of bypassing life or a way of coping with the pressures and the stressors of life. And so in some respects, when a person goes through religious deconstruction, they can be losing a lot of their coping mechanisms that they had for life. And so a lot of us are going through this, been on this deconstruction path, since 2016 for me. A lot of people, it happened during the pandemic when we were shut up at home and people are watching, listening to more podcasts, listening to more podcasts or accessing more information on the internet. And yet we're dealing with this incredibly strange, difficult, stressful, pressing time. And everybody had their ideas. Everybody had their opinions. And I've said this before, but like with the shutdown, it was immediate, right? Like our lives changed overnight. We're able to go where we want. We're able to hang out with who we want. And then overnight, restaurants are shut down. Gyms are shut down. Schools are shut down. In my case, my work was not shut down, but because I do what I do, I was privileged enough, I guess, that I could work from home. But still, that's like a massive change that happened overnight, right? And it stressed people out. It put a lot of pressure and stress on people. And then for some people, it alleviated stressors because they didn't have to go to work. And, a lot of my clients got mentally healthier during that time. I know there was concern about, this is going to have negative impact on the mental health of individuals. And it'd be interesting to see the studies when it comes out. And, as we have more time to analyze those public health measures and stuff that were taken, it'll be interesting to see what the actual overall arc of mental health or impact was there. I suspect there were short-term relief, but long-term negative effects. And so there can be a lot of pressure in life. There can be a lot of stressors. And maybe we would have used our religious upbringing, you know, whether it was prayer, whether it was faith, whether it was, you know, some kind of belief that God was in charge or that prayer worked or we could, you know, have our community around us. And those things helped us get through difficult times. If it didn't help us in any way, shape, or form, we never would have gotten into it. There had to have been some kind of benefit from it, right? And so for a lot of people, they have awakened to the negativity of their religious experience. They've understood that they experienced trauma from that. And then when the pressures of life come, what do we do? And so all of that, like, rolled up into one can be really difficult. I know it was very difficult for me. And it's one of the reasons that I keep doing what I'm doing, because I want to help people who are on the path. And maybe I'm just a little bit further along because I've been at this for a longer period of time. Also, I have a mental health background, very trauma-informed. As a therapist, almost work exclusively with helping people resolve trauma and anxiety. And so I'm able to bring those, you know, that knowledge and information and tools to help people as well. So I have this really sort of unique place or in this space where I can bring those things out, hopefully in these live videos and even people I've connected with one-on-one and done coaching with and stuff to help you figure this stuff out, right? So what am I talking about? I'm talking about the challenges that we may face and where that leaves us. And then what can happen when we get under pressure and we don't feel like we have the resources or the coping mechanisms that we used to have, we can begin to shut down. We can begin to, you can think about depression. There, now, let me say this first off, and this is just information. This isn't for anybody to take and apply to yourself specifically, because your situation, if you struggle to battle with depression, your depression is unique to everybody's mental health is unique to them, or mental wellness or mental destabilization or dysregulation is individual to that person. Nobody's going to experience depression the same way. Nobody experiences life or anything in life the same way. So nobody's going to experience depression the same way. Nobody's going to have anxiety exactly the same way. So this is just general information. So it may or may not apply. But one of the things that happens in depression is that we just completely shut down. There's a growing theory in the counseling world. It's all the rage right now, especially with trauma, but also with depression. So here's how this works. So your vagus nerve is the biggest, most important nerve in your body, and it runs from your brainstem. This is really where the brain and body communicate, is through the vagus nerve. So it runs from your brainstem all the way down into your gut. And information is being sent like on a highway from the brain to the body and from the body to the brain. It's going both ways. And this, the function of a particular nerve is to govern your autonomic nervous system. Your autonomic nervous system has two primary systems. The first one is called the sympathetic nervous system, which we know as fight or flight. And the other is the parasympathetic nervous system. And we generally refer to that in layman's terms as rest and digest. So the sympathetic nervous system gets activated anytime that there is a threat. Anytime that you feel stressed out, anytime that you feel uncomfortable, you're in the sympathetic nervous system. When you're very relaxed, when you're watching a movie, when you're falling asleep, when, you know, maybe you've had a good meal with friends and you just feel like all is right in the world, if anybody ever feels that way anymore, that's the activation of what's known as the parasympathetic nervous system, or rest and digest. And one of the things I've noticed in the spiritual community, meditation community, is that we generally believe that being in the activation of the sympathetic nervous system is not healthy for us, that we should really strive to never be, to always be in this place of relaxation and letting go, or basically that our parasympathetic nervous system should be running and operating all the time. And then there's a lot of information that's given, and a lot of it's good, a lot of it's true, but it needs to be nuanced. We need to have a nuanced discussion about this, because there's a belief out there that if I can get into the parasympathetic system, the rest and digest, you know, eliminate all my stress, and I can stay in that space, that it does all these amazing things for my body, that it increases aspects of the the immune system, that it turns on anti-aging chemicals, that it can relieve us of a lot of our diseases and stuff like that. And there is truth in all of that. There are studies that back all that up, but it needs to be a nuanced discussion, because the truth of the matter is that you're healthiest physically. Now, this is scientifically verifiable. You are the healthiest. You have the best chance at longevity when you have a good balance between the activation of the sympathetic nervous system, or stress and discomfort, and it's balanced with healthy activation of the parasympathetic nervous system, or where you're just relaxed and not feeling any stress at all. So, if you think, you know, that I've got to go and just be in this, you know, super chill, super spiritual place all the time, where I'm just feeling love and compassion, and I'm not feeling any kind of threat, and I'm not feeling any kind of upset or anger or anything, then I'm in a good space. You know, I'm going to be healthy. This is what's going to be best for me. But the truth of the matter is that a lot of those benefits that are measured over a short period of time. So, for example, if you're familiar with heart math and the experiments that they've done and the work that they've done on brain and heart coherence, a lot of those studies are looking at the short-term gains. In other words, it's true that if you get stressed out and if you get angry, that there is an antibiotic in your saliva that they can measure right away, and you see a reduction in the production of that antibody. And if you put yourself into a space of compassion, a space of gratitude, then there's an immediate and very significant increase in this same antibody in the saliva. So if you can imagine the studies, they're very short term. They're having people practice this stuff, and then they're measuring the immediate effects. To the best of my knowledge, I don't know of a published, it could be out there, I just don't know about it, if they've done long term results with that. In other words, follow these people for months or years after who are practicing this and seeing where they're at. Because the truth of the matter is that longevity studies, the latest longevity studies, show that we have certain genes that we can turn on or turn off that will increase our longevity by renewing our youth, so to speak. But these get turned on primarily through distress. These get turned on primarily through discomfort. So this is why, one of the reasons that ice baths or cold showers is all the rage right now. I don't know if you've heard about that, but that's supposed to be really good for you. It's good for you because it puts you in a very high level of stress. Working out, the whole reason that you warm up before you work out is to turn on the sympathetic nervous system, because you want the sympathetic nervous system to get the best benefits out of exercise. You want the sympathetic nervous system activated. You want to be in some kind of a fight or flight mode. And that's why you warm up. You don't warm up. They found out now that stretching, like if before you do weight resistance training and stuff like that, that if you stretch a lot, you're actually more inclined to get injured than less inclined. So your warm-up doesn't need to consist of a bunch of stretching and stuff like that. What your warm-up needs to consist of is some really intense sort of physical activity, whether it's running on a treadmill or doing, you know, mountain climbers or jumping jacks, whatever it is, it's to activate and turn on that sympathetic nervous system. Intermittent fasting is another thing that's all the rage right now. Part of the reason intermittent fasting has so many benefits is that it stresses the body out. I'm going to get back to polyvagal theory, I promise, and depression. It stresses the body out, and it raises your blood pressure. One of the reasons that intense exercise can help with lowering your blood pressure is it raises the blood pressure, and then the body sort of overcompensates for that later by bringing the blood pressure down. When you get stressed, these genes turn on that do all kinds of wonderful things for you, but that happens after the fact. So ice baths, exercising, intermittent fasting, all this stuff is kind of pointing at the same thing, that in order to have long-term longevity effects, we need to be stressed out. We need to be uncomfortable. We need to activate these types of things. And I guess this is a first world problem when you have to, you know, if you're so, immune to stress that you have to take an ice bath to stress yourself out. First world problem. So what am I saying? I'm trying to say that stress is not the enemy. Discomfort is not the enemy. And always being in a state of compassion or gratitude or relaxation or whatever kind of a state of being is not healthy for you. It's not healthy for you. You want to have a good balance between these things. So that brings me back to depression. This is, and I'll tie this all together before I'm finished this morning. But it's just important to realize that we need that other stuff. We need to be in stress at times. We need to be in the fight or flight state at times so that our body is balanced, so that we reach homeostasis, and so that we can have as much longevity and vitality as we want to have or are capable of having at this whatever stage of life that you're at, right? Depression with polyvagal theory. So what they're saying is that since this vagus nerve activates these systems, that at the top, they use an illustration of a ladder. At the top of the ladder is being in a place of social connection. This is really important for us. So this is a place of rest and digest. This is a space where you feel comfortable and you feel safe with people, with your people, with your community, your family, whatever the case may be. But you're relaxed, you're open, you're present, you're not worrying, and you're able to interact socially at surface levels and at deep levels with a feeling of harmony and safety. Now, when you get stressed out, the first system within the sympathetic nervous system, or the next step down the ladder, you could say, is what they call active responses to stress. Active responses to stress. So active response to stress, an active response to stress, it means that you're going to do something about it. You're either going to fight, you're going to attack, and defend, or you are going to run away. Either strategy can be effective depending upon what's activating the stress. So the idea is that I'm at the top of this ladder. I'm in this rest and digest. I'm in this place of compassion. I'm in this place of gratitude. And then when stress comes at me, problems come at me, life situations, threats, whatever it may be, I have an active response. I jump into action to deal with the situation in the moment. Now, most of us aren't running from saber-toothed tigers or having to defend our food from the neighbors coming to take it and stuff like that. So most of our stress is not addressed by a fist fight or, you know, running and finding shelter. But we have that same response that goes on. So what happens is that we respond to our problems in life actively. So there's a problem there and I jump on it. I attack the problem, whatever that might be. If it's, you know, think about it this way. If you get a diagnosis from your doctor that you have heart disease, that you're at a high range for a heart attack, so then maybe I attack that problem by changing my diet. I attack the problem by taking some blood pressure medicine or some kind of beta blocker or something like that. I start to exercise. I start to do things. You see, I'm actively responding to that threat, to that bad news. If I'm put on a performance improvement plan at work, I maybe look at that performance improvement plan. This is an even better illustration. Your boss comes in, tells you you suck. You got, 6 months to do these different things. So if I actively attack that problem through my fight response, then what I'm going to do is I'm going to maybe verbally defend myself, argue and say, hey, you're not being fair. Or yes, I did get these things done and you just missed it. Or if I didn't get those things done and it's an honest evaluation, I attack the problem by going to work to solve the problem by changing those things while I'm on the job. The flight response, on the other hand, might be that I get up and walk out, walk off the job, that I give my 2 weeks, that I go out and find another job. And then that's the flight response, right? I'm getting away from that boss. I'm getting away from that place, but I'm actively engaging the situation. Let's see. L says, unfortunately, I've had too many intensely stressful situations happen consecutively, and it's left me with a dorsal vagal state where I am stuck in freeze and overwhelm, and I'm now trying to recover. That's exactly where I'm going. L, thank you for that comment, because the next step down would be when I'm so overwhelmed by stress, and this is a response to constant and continual stress. This is where we start getting into what's known in the field as complex post-traumatic stress disorder. And the next step down is you go into the freeze response. So the freeze response, you could see in nature, might work like when an animal plays dead. In other words, for that animal in that situation, an active response is not possible. They can't overwhelm their predator, and they can't outrun their predator, right? So what do you do when the problem is bigger and faster than you? If the problem is bigger than you, you can't fight it because you know you're going to lose the fight, and you can't outrun it because it's faster than you, so you know you can't get away from it. So now the active responses to stress are off the table. So the next response, and this is just biology, gang. This has nothing to do with your character. This has nothing to do with how strong of a person that you are. This has to do with an accumulation of overwhelming events, stress, or trauma. And you can't go in actively, or at least you believe at this point, because you're so overwhelmed, that you can't overcome the situation by attacking it, that you can't get out of the situation by running away from it. This is why complex post-traumatic stress disorder is a thing, because you are in a stressful environment and you wake up every morning and that stressful environment isn't going away. I mentioned the pandemic and the shutdown earlier. A lot of us experienced some complex trauma through that event because we couldn't change the world, right? We still haven't really gone back to the way things were before. So we were going to have to deal with all this stuff, the financial implications of it, the health implications, social implications. And when we go to bed at night, we're going to wake up in the same world and we're going to have to deal with it again. This could be a person who was bullied a lot in school or on a job that they couldn't get away from or out of. So you're, bullied in middle school on day one, and for 285 days or however long the school year is there, you're going to have to wake up and you can't get out of the situation, right? So there's this accumulation or overwhelm of stress. That's what we call complex post-traumatic stress disorder. Whereas post-traumatic stress disorder, simple post-traumatic stress disorder, might be related to one event. I got robbed and held at gunpoint. Someone that I loved died. There was some kind of assault or abuse that I suffered that was one event. That can give you post-traumatic stress disorder. But when that abuse or that trauma happens over and over and over and over and over, and you can't escape, you can't overcome it, you can't make it stop, so attack isn't working, and you can't escape, so running away from it isn't working. So then we go now into the next phase biologically of the sympathetic nervous system. Your sympathetic nervous system does this to you based on your environment. I really want to stress this. This has nothing to do with who's a stronger person or who isn't a stronger person. You have no control over this. This is meant for your survival. So you can go into a freeze response. And you go into a freeze response, this could be the person who does nothing, who is in a stressful situation, doesn't feel like they have any power over it, or doesn't have power over it. Either one can be true. And so they don't do anything. So this is where, like, procrastination could kick in. This is where I don't believe that anybody's going to want to hire me. See, this is a social thing. This is a social thing. If I'm at the top of the ladder, I'm at this place where I'm at my best in that moment, where I can express myself and I can connect and I have a sense of confidence. I have a sense of self-efficacy that I can be effective at doing various different things. And then we can get stuck to where I don't feel like anybody's going to want to hire me, for example, or I can't get away from this situation, or I feel like I have to stay in this toxic relationship that's abusive for me because I'm married, or I have to stay in this toxic relationship, or I have to stay in church. This is why religious trauma is almost always complex post-traumatic stress disorder, because we feel like we're stuck, because we feel like if we leave, because God is bigger than us, right? We can't overcome God. We can't beat him up. And we also can't run from God, right? If we run away from the group, then we're in even more danger. In some of these systems, we're told we're even more danger from God if we run away from God. We're in danger of hell. We're in danger of our life being not as blessed, even though it's not blessed at the time. So whatever the case may be, we stay stuck in this situation. Then we go into a freeze response. Now, there's still one other response that we have. One other option, and this is where some depression comes in. This is where some depression comes in. Our vagus nerve gets so activated. We are so overwhelmed by stress. We are so overwhelmed by life. We're just so tired of taking the hits that we go into this place of complete resignation where we've just sort of quit. And this is where the physical symptoms of depression can come in. Physical symptoms of depression, meaning absolutely no energy to do anything. Can't get out of bed. A condition called anhedonia, which means I can't get any enjoyment from anything that I used to get enjoyment from. I can't switch on that top part. I can't switch on my parasympathetic nervous system at all. And so now I'm shut down. And at that point, what's going on with me is I'm just saying no to life in general. I'm saying no to everything in life because it's so overwhelming. And so that's a person, just like I said, you don't want to be in the parasympathetic response all the time, but you definitely don't want to be in the stress response all the time. You can't be in this place of compassion and gratitude. It's not even good for you to be in this place of compassion and gratitude and all that stuff all the time. It's not good for you. It's just not. I mean, the science is there to support that. But it's definitely bad for you to be in this, especially this resignation space. When I have access, and how do I know? How do I know if I'm at the bottom part or in those lower two rungs of the ladder? I know because when problems arise, I do nothing. The active responses aren't available to me anymore. And that's a really important key. The active responses in this moment, this isn't a forever settled permanent problem for you. I'm just trying to help you understand that if you get hit with a lot of problems in life and you just do nothing, you just stand there and take the hits, it's because literally, biologically, systemically, those active responses of fight or flight, of attack or avoid, to solve the problem is not available to you, particularly if you're all the way down in the shutoff mode. So what can happen with a lot of people then is they just get heaped socially with shame. People get frustrated with them because they're not moving. They're not doing anything. Why don't you do something? Why don't you get out of bed? Why don't you this? Why don't you that? And that just adds more stress. Or internally, they beat up on themselves. What's wrong with me? How come, like, it can feel like this. I had one person describe it to me this way. It can feel like everybody else got a manual or a book on how life works, and I didn't get mine. Or I can listen to, you know, these podcasts like this one. I can listen to some of Aaron's old videos where he's encouraging me to think positively, to apply law of attraction, to take action. I can listen to, you know, I don't like to use names, but you know, the big ones out there. I can watch these videos in the spiritual community that if I'm, you know, connected to source, if I'm connected to my higher self, self-help type stuff, right? Get out of the relationship, get a new job, learn a new skill. And that can also end up then just heaping more guilt and shame on me. This is why telling people who are at this space that are this far down the ladder, when you tell them, because I know this is popular in the spiritual community, that I chose this suffering before the foundation of the world, that is not going to be helpful for them. Like, my soul chose to experience all these horrible things because that, I'm growing, or I'm working out my karma, or I'm learning the lessons that I'm supposed to learn. That, all of that may be true, but what I'm saying is someone that's that overwhelmed and that far down the ladder, that's not going to help them. If you're listening to podcasts or following teachers or reading Facebook posts or daily inspirational stuff, that can be a really great thing if you're not that far down the polyvagal ladder. If you are sometimes in freeze, stuck there in freeze, or in this like complete shutdown response, please understand. And, or if you're dealing with someone who's in that space in your life, please understand those active responses are not available. So in other words, I can watch all this stuff and I can try it for a day or two, maybe 3 or 4 days, a week, or I can't try it at all, but I try it for a little bit. And honestly, somebody that's under that much stress, and the science bears this out as well, meditation probably is not a good thing for them. There are people who their environment has been so bad. It has been so toxic. The problems in life have been so overwhelming that here's what happens. So when I sit down to meditate, what I'm doing is I'm switching off the sympathetic nervous system. So I hope this helps you understand the sympathetic nervous system. It's not just fight or flight. We talk about that, you know, fight or flight. And it's not just fight, flight, or freeze. Or it's not just fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. They've added that one now in the the more secular, trauma-informed situations. Certainly fawning can be a coping mechanism in a toxic relationship with an abusive person. And then we just learn to fawn. We learn to fawn to authorities and stuff to keep ourselves safe. But that is a psychological coping mechanism. That is not part of the activation of the sympathetic nervous system. So it's not technically accurate to say that to put fawning in with fight or flight. And it's not even accurate to put freeze in with fight or flight, because if you're at freeze, you're already at a space where your system is telling you, your vagus nerve is telling your brain. The information is coming up from the body to the brain saying, we have no solution to this problem except to freeze and hope it goes away. We have no solution to these problems except to just stay here in one place. So you can think about it this way. If you're at the bottom, if you're at the resignation, the information that's traveling, this highway, this largest nerve in your body, is basically saying you have no choice except to hope the storm blows over. Just stay inside, stay sheltered, stay away from people, stay away from situations. Don't do anything that's going to put you in danger. It's a very scary place out there. Do nothing. At that point, fight or flight isn't active in the body, because you've passed that, right? So again, if you find yourself in this situation, or you find other people in this situation, please understand those active responses are not available to them. Now, if you are in that space and you try to meditate and you try to just switch on the parasympathetic nervous system immediately, because that's what you're doing when you're meditating, you're turning off the sympathetic nervous system and you're turning on the parasympathetic nervous system. I'm turning off fight or flight because I'm still at the first and second rung of the ladder. I have access to that first rung, right? I have access to rest and digest for a long period of time. I'm not saying that people that are all the way down the ladder don't have ever go into a state of rest and digest. That's impossible. But to have a sustained balance between the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system, it's all out of whack. It's all out of balance now, right? So it doesn't mean you never enter rest or digest, but to try to do that on purpose, to try to do that deliberately, can actually be unhealthy. And here's why. Think about it this way. If you have lived in under threat for so long that you believe that you just have to weather the storm, you just have to hang in there, right? Then I suddenly sit down, go to a meditation retreat or whatever, and I suddenly sit down and I start to just slow my breathing. A lot of meditation exercises are like, you know, take deep breaths, deep breath in, and longer exhale. Because in reality, every time you inhale, you're slightly turning on your sympathetic nervous system. And when you exhale, you're activating the parasympathetic. So you can think about it, if you think about a teeter-totter, that's kind of doing this every time you breathe. That's balance. That's where you want to be. If you're like this, right, where you're just so far out in stress that you're on those bottom two rungs of the ladder, so you find yourself somewhere in there, and you immediately, through meditation, try to do this, what's going to happen? Just think about it. If I have been on such high alert for so long, and all of a sudden I switch off all the alerts, what is that going to do to me? Is that going to put me in a safe space? Actually, it's not. I can explain it this way. If you were in war, if you were ever served in combat, or even just trained to be in combat, you were in the military. Whether you served or not, you still did the trainings and stuff that would, you know, stress you out. But let's say you're in a real battlefield and there's an enemy at your doorstep. You're not going to take the night watch off. You see what I'm saying? Like, you got people that are standing guard day and night waiting for an attack. That's the person that's in this state of stress and overwhelm. And to suddenly try to meditate is like telling the body, okay, we know you're in horrible danger. We know you've been horribly hurt. We know you've been horribly traumatized. And we know there's still a threat out there. Metaphorically speaking, right? We know there's still a threat out there. So we're going to give the night watchman the night off, or during the day. We're going to take the troops off the walls. We're going to let down our guard. We're going to let down our defenses. That's going to be very alarming. Do you see it? That's going to be very alarming. So my point is, if you're that far down the vagal ladder, so to speak, trying to get up to the top in one giant step is just going to send you further down. So the answer isn't always just meditate. The answer isn't always just try heart math and put yourself in that space of gratitude for a period of time and all this great stuff's going to happen. And also think about this. There's a lot of, when you're at that space of overwhelm, there's a lot of negative thinking going on. There's a lot of stuff in there. There's a lot of emotions. There's a lot of trauma. There's a lot of things that you're not ready to face. And so the other bullshit advice that's out there that's given by people who don't know anything but think they're really fantastic spiritual teachers is just go into that space, go into the pain, go into the trauma, go into those parts. No, because that's just going to because of the way the system works, that's just going to make the situation worse. So if that person tries to meditate, and I'm not saying don't try to meditate, I'm just saying baby steps here, right? And managing expectations so that they are realistic. If that person tries to meditate, all that negativity, all that trauma, all that stuff's going to come up. And what does that do? What is that doing to that person? What's it doing to their nervous system? It is overwhelming it again. So meditation, instead of being a healing modality, meditation becomes a destructive modality because it's re-traumatizing the person over and over again. You might hear this term, you know, people throw it around, I'm trauma-informed. Let me tell you something. I have met and heard about a ton of therapists out there who claim to be trauma-informed, and I don't know where they're coming from, because they don't conduct themselves with clients in any way that remotely resembles anything that is trauma-informed. So if you're going to a therapist and the therapist wants to have you talk about what happened to you, first session, maybe even the 10th session, depending on who you are and depending on where that therapeutic alliance is. But if they're sitting there and they're saying, you know, tell me about your traumatic childhood, tell me about the stuff that happened, they're not trauma-informed. Because if you sit there and start talking and bringing up those memories and bringing out all that stuff, what happens is instead of it being a healing modality, instead of it being something that's moving you back up the ladder, it's something that, again, creates a overwhelm to your system. So if you go to your therapist and you constantly leave feeling overwhelmed, there's a problem. Now, on the flip side of that, if you go to your therapist and you constantly leave feeling good, that also is a problem. You're probably not going to get better. You're just probably not going to get better. So, again, this is generalized information. I'm not trying to interfere with anybody's treatment plan, or I'm not giving anybody clinical mental health advice. I'm just sharing general information about how the system works, right? And maybe some general information about how to know if you've got a truly trauma-informed person. So you see what I'm saying? So, like, some of the stuff that we're taught, you know, meditate, practice heart math, do this, do that, it can actually make the system worse. This is why this being dogmatic about things is so dangerous. Because you could have a testimony that maybe you were in the freeze response, you were overwhelmed, whatever, you got inspired, you went to a conference, you learned how to meditate, you learned some things about the law of attraction, you connected with higher beings, your spiritual team, your higher self, whatever, and you started practicing gratitude every day, you started practicing compassion, and it absolutely transformed your life. And so you think, this is it. And for you, this is it. Right? This was the solution to your problem. But then what happens, and particularly if we come from religious backgrounds, we become so zealous about what was the answer for us. And boy, did I do this early on. Jeez, gosh. I was thinking today, it's sure a bummer that we have to learn this morning when I got up. It's a drag that we have to learn so many important lessons in life from our mistakes. And then, you know, like, why couldn't I have known this before I made it? Well, you couldn't have known it before you made it because you didn't know it, and the mistake taught it to you. So it's just one of those things about life. It's like, I have the information now, but I don't need it now. And I needed it back then and I didn't have it when I needed it. Right. But so what we do is we zealously say, yes, this is the answer. This brought me this. My disease went away. My neck pain went away. I got a better job. I met my soulmate, whatever the case may be. And so then we say, this is the answer for everybody. It's not the answer for everybody, because not everybody is in the same place that you are in, and not every tool is going to work for every person or every situation. So it's okay to share, this is my experience, this is my path, this is what helped me, this is what I believe to be true. But when we become zealous and dogmatic, this sort of one size fits all for every person, that's when it becomes just another toxic, dogmatic system, whether it calls itself religious, self-help, spiritual, whatever the case may be. Now, the other thing that can cause overwhelm for people is if they're in a, I'm going to talk about conspiracies, because I know some of you get triggered if I call it conspiracy theories, even though it really is a theory. Theory isn't a bad word. They use it in science all the time for stuff they believe is true. This is polyvagal theory. Even though there's a bunch of science that can back it up, science is never settled. It's always a theory. Okay, so that's how I'm using the term. But, and this is, like, if I believe the world is a dangerous place and I have no access to active responses to stress, then someone tells me there's this, the world's a horrible place because it's being run by all these terrible people and whatever the case may be. And I focus on that. I put my focus on that. I put my attention on that. I put my attention on news media. I put my attention way too much on social media. Even too much information adds to the overwhelm. Too much negative information definitely adds to the overwhelm. So again, I'm staying in that stuck place and I'm not getting better. So if you are that person, this is just ramblings. But the way this is coming out, this was the furthest thing from my mind. So I just believe there's people out here that need to hear this. If you find yourself in that space, all is not lost. You're not in a hopeless situation. You're not in a helpless situation, even though it feels hopeless and helpless. And just to give you like some practical things that you can do. Number one, I would say manage your expectations and don't beat up on yourself. Realize that if you're not, super spiritual, if you're getting frustrated because you can't get into that place of gratitude, you can't get into that place of relaxation, you can't get into that place of rest, it's hard for you to meditate. You meditate and you start to freak out. For some people, again, just slowing your breath is going to signal to you that you're taking the guards off their stands and it's going to make it worse for you. Then just understand, like, that's probably not the solution for you at this moment. Let's get you up a little bit higher on the ladder first. So managing those expectations and realizing that change, like, I didn't get to this place overnight. Nobody gets to the bottom part of the ladder because of one stressful event. They get there through multiple problems and overwhelm. And your friend that's sitting there telling you to just be positive, just think positive. Why can't you just enjoy the day? Why can't you just wake up and be like, God, thank you. Thank you for this day. I have another day. Why can't you just look at your future and think, oh my God, it's going to be so wonderful and beautiful. And then that's not helpful. That's not helpful. That's like piling on with that person. So if you have somebody that's really depressed and they're talking to you, just hold space for them. Don't offer any solutions, because if they had access to action, a solution requires action. And if they had access to active responses, they'd be doing them. So when we're advice giving, saying you just need to do this and you just need to do that and everything will be fine and everything will be rosy and we can come back up in the clouds, you're dumping on them. Just FYI. So managing the expectations, realizing that this is going to be a journey for you and not a overnight or a quick fix. This is going to take some time. Now, again, I just want to put out there, I am just giving out information. And if you are in a mental health crisis and you have access and availability to mental health resources, psychiatrist, psychologist, professional counselor, licensed clinical social worker. That's what you need. That's what you need. And I would highly recommend you find yourself the best provider you possibly can and get into treatment. If you are in treatment, I am not saying anything to interfere. I'm not giving you personal advice at all. I'm just generally sharing. And I have to give those disclaimers because I am a licensed professional, so I carry a greater weight of responsibility to people. So first thing is manage your expectations. First thing is realize all is not lost. Second thing is manage your expectations. This is not going to get fixed overnight. This is going to get fixed in steps, and you probably need mental health interventions. And don't be ashamed of that, because you don't have to stay there. It's not like a fixed disease, you know. I know they say that, but I don't believe it. I've seen too many people recover and get back on track to believe that. Anecdotally, and again, every situation is different. So second step, manage your expectations. Third step, this is going to happen in baby steps. All right? So I want you to realize, number one, that stress is not bad. It's not a bad thing. Doing uncomfortable stuff is not a bad thing. Now, this is going to sound a little bit counterintuitive, but you do need to expose yourself to some discomfort that you can manage, because we're going to try to convince the brain and body that you do have active responses. So this is where cold therapy could come in helpful for you. What's cold therapy? Ice bath plunge. Not all of us have nice ice baths in our big home like Joe Rogan or Andrew Huberman, right? But you can take a cold shower. Aaron, why would I do that? Because it's going to wake up that active response, because that is a situation you can fix. That is a stressor that you can fix. So I get in a cold shower. I take a cold shower. I endure it for as long as I can. Let's say 3 minutes, 30 seconds, whatever. Start small. It's going to shock me. It's going to actually bring me up the ladder, you see? Ugh. And then I do have control over that. So then when I turn it off, I fought against it. And when I got out, I got away from it. I ran from it. I've activated both responses. And my brain's like, oh, we can handle it. Just a little bit wakes up and says, oh, we can handle stress. Pick one activity that you can do. This is where, go back and listen to last week, controlling the things that you can control, changing your environment. Elle says, for me, exercise seems the best stress for my freeze response. Absolutely. Because again, warming up, exercise, it's putting you in that space. So deciding you're going to do some exercise when you don't want to do it. Now, here's the key. Because there is a part of the brain, and I forget what it's called because it's a really long name, that only grows. My battery's about to die. I don't have my plug. So if you lose me, just real quick. I'll finish this real fast. Sorry, just got a notification that my battery's about to die on my laptop. Aaron. I can't fix this problem right now. Doing some house chores, just like picking one thing that makes you uncomfortable, because there's a part of the brain that grows that no matter what age you are, when you do something hard without a reward. So whatever that is for you, whatever it is that you can control, maybe you're going to do laundry today and you really don't want to do laundry, or you're going to exercise today and you really don't want to exercise, or you're going to take that cold shower and you really don't want to do it, and you make yourself do those little things, not big things, doing small little things so that the brain can relearn, the brain and body can relearn, we can handle this stuff. We can do hard things. Now, what's a hard thing for you may not be a hard thing for someone else because they're at a different place in relationship to their sympathetic nervous system and their parasympathetic nervous system. So I don't want to just drop. Looks like I'm pretty low on battery. So I'm going to say a quick adios here. Hopefully this was helpful. Let me know in the comments, and I will be with you again next week. Bye.